So we are anthropology students at Washington College, and we're doing a project this summer studying community response to flooding on the Eastern Shore.
That's Kirsten Webb, a rising senior. She and Haley Hartman, another rising senior, are sitting around the dining room table with Roland and Sheila Bradshaw at their home on Smith Island. The students have been traveling through Talbot, Dorchester, and Somerset counties, talking to residents about changes in their communities over time, experiences with flooding, and how they personally and their communities have dealt with it. And it doesn't take Roland Bradshaw long to respond.
Well, we had some flooding, but you know, a lot of people said it's like it's what is it, sea level rise?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it. I don't believe in that. I don't.
Instead, he says the island is washing away.
And we don't have no flooding until the wind comes to the east, or we have a hurricane.
So, do you pay attention to the wind patterns, and do you prepare if you know the wind's going to be blowing easterly? Kirsten asks. Nope, says Roland. They're used to it. They're survivors who can make out with what a lot of people couldn't make out with.
On the mainland, you used to go into Walmart or going out to eat or going shopping. All over here, we don't do it. We're just used to it. That's how we grew up into it, and we're just survivors up on the island.
And besides, adds Sheila, the tides are different here than on the mainland.
That's one thing about when the tide comes up over here. We try to hurry up and go or come back, do what we got to do, because then in a couple hours it's gone. But in the city, see, it just builds up and builds up.
The students' project mirrors one conducted by students at Western Illinois University in 2008, when massive flooding inundated communities along the Mississippi, Missouri, and Illinois rivers. David Casagrande was on the faculty at the time and ran that project. He says the governor, Rod Blagojevich, needed some help in responding to the situation by figuring out what made the folks along those rivers tick. Casagrande, now an associate professor of anthropology at Lehigh University in Pennsylvania, says his students talked to thousands and thousands of people.
And we were basically interested in how people's perceptions and attitudes influence whether they will or will not have flood insurance, how they perceive their risk, and ultimately this issue of relocation.
And although most folks don't want to leave their homes, Casagrande's students found one whole town, Valmyer, Illinois, where residents packed up and moved to higher ground. It wasn't easy. It took a while, he says, but eventually they did it.
Now, not everybody leaves. There are a few diehards who are still living down in the floodplain, but they built a beautiful new town up on a bluff.
Aaron Lampman, a friend of Casagrande's and an associate anthropology professor running the Washington College Project, says they chose the Eastern Shore for this study because it's one of the hot spots for flooding in the U.S., and Maryland suffers some of the most repetitive flood loss in the country. He says they found a really interesting dynamic on the lower shore.
We have predictive maps, you know, put out by FEMA that show a real serious possibility of flooding and even inundation in the next 50 to 100 years, and yet people aren't relocating.
His students tell him they're finding people with a sense of place, a deep attachment to the Chesapeake Bay and the lower eastern shore. Moving just doesn't seem like an option to them.
Many of them have lived here for six generations or more, and they seem to have a sense of moral obligation of maintaining community in these places.
You can hear that as the Bradshaws talk about the different world they live in.
I told her it's inconvenient, but I can't imagine living somewhere else.
Not no more. Not way it's got over on the mainland, over that way, you know, way they go road boss shooting, you know, and all that stuff, and over here you walk at any time you want of night or day. You ain't got to worry about nobody bothering you.
Sheila tells of a mainlander who owns a house on the island that her son takes care of.
He told me, he said, it's really not that much to do on Smith Island. He said, all I want is quiet. Peace and quiet's what I want, and he loved it here.
Lampman says the students are finding that people are aware of more flooding, stronger and more frequent storms, and erosion. But they don't seem to think that's translating into the loss of their land or their community.
And so instead, they talk about, you know, trying to find federal funding to slow down the processes of erosion.
That's what Lampman calls structural solutions. Things like seawalls, groins, breakwaters, elevating houses.
You name it, if it's a structural solution, then people are pretty interested in it. And so people are biased towards those kinds of things rather than, you know, thinking about relocation, which, you know, in the next 50 to 100 years, the predictions are that, you know, millions of people in the United States will be relocating.
On Smith Island, the Corps of Engineers recently started a project to slow the erosion at Bradshaw's community of Rhodes Point. They've been trying to get that project going for 50 years, Bradshaw says, and finally it's here to keep the island from washing away.
Yeah, well, it's been washing ever since I was a kid. You know, over time you have a lot of wind. Like this past winter, we had a lot of wind coming from the west and the northwest. And every time you have a lot of wind, it washes it away.
The students, who have been surviving on grants, have pretty much finished their interviews. They'll be back in September to start analyzing those interviews, looking for themes and patterns. Smith Islanders will continue to look for ways to hold off the water and preserve their homes. I'm Joel McCord for Chesapeake, a journalism collaborative.